The following episode of K-Voice recorded at 12:04 a.m., January 16th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
Resist!
A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death.
That, of course, was Martin Luther King Jr. Hi, I'm Kelly, and this is your Resistance Podcast, K, Voice of Resistance. I hope everyone found something fulfilling and meaningful to do this past weekend for Martin Luther King's birthday. I will come back around to the events of the weekend later in the podcast. The news is nearly all about our president's big mouth, but there are a few things worth discussing that are not in the headlines. There is a bipartisan
gasp. Bipartisan.
Believe it or not, a bipartisan bill going through the House that aims at stabilizing the healthcare markets, something we desperately need and have been asking for. This bill, known as the Bipartisan Market Stabilization and Innovation Act of 2017, aims to stabilize the individual healthcare insurance marketplace and enact reforms aimed at bringing down healthcare costs. It would fund cost-sharing reduction, CSR payments, which help low- and middle-income families afford healthcare expenses, create a $115 billion fund for states to stabilize the healthcare insurance marketplace, streamline state innovation waivers, repeal the medical device tax, and modify the employer mandate so it impacts fewer small businesses. Okay. We need to have a chat, progressives, liberals, Team Blue, whatever we want to call ourselves. We need to have a little powwow. So have a seat. There are two main arguments with this bill, one for and one against. And yes, I know there's a bunch of arguments, but really, for the main ones, there's one for, clearly. This bipartisan bill represents good faith compromise that will stabilize the individual health insurance market while also erasing regulations to reduce healthcare costs, thus helping Americans. Or something the likes thereof. And the argument against, because we live in a country that is roughly divided between left versus right, the argument goes something like, this bill keeps too much of Obamacare in place by continuing to provide subsidies for health insurance companies while also undercutting the ACA by repealing the medical device tax. One would think, given our polarized red versus blue society, on the nonpartisan Countable site, that all the comments against would be about the ills of Obamacare and blah, blah, blah. But no. No. The most upvoted comment against, with 186 upvotes, is... And wait, real quick, let me be clear. On Countable, when you leave a comment, the comments are sent to your personal legislator as like a letter or a message to your legislator. I've done it. I've left a comment and I've gotten a response back from my House representative. So that's the way it works. The people who leave comments on here are literally telling our legislators what to do. And the most upvoted comment on the negative side with 186 upvotes, quote, I'm a physician. This bill aims to be a band-aid, not a cure. Single-payer system. Everyone needs to be covered. Unquote. And beneath that comment is John's comment with 91 of votes. Quote, universal single-payer health care. Cradle to grave. Unquote. Okay, so look, I want single-payer. I really do. And I think one day, hopefully sooner than later, there will be a time when we will absolutely need to push, do or die, make it or break it, accept nothing less than single payer. But right now, when we have no power, right now is not the time. Right now, the ship is leaking and we need to work together to plug the holes or we are going to lose lives. And right now, the only ones who have lifeboats are the rich. Those are the only lives that are going to get saved here. And those who cannot afford to be precious about impossible goals at the moment are going to die. Yes, our legislators should vote for this bill. And when we are in power, like adults, then we move through legislation, through the government.
First, know how the system works.
And then work it through the government, through the steps. And then step by step, if we have to, we will one day get to where we need to go. We will have single payer. This all or nothing attitude, it's not how the real world works. And it only works to hurt people. So stop it. K Keep working locally. Get your state legislature first to go single payer, and that will then make it more accessible for the U.S. as a whole to make the transition once they see how it is done. We keep educating people door to door if we have to. And yes, we actually have to. This is a big part of the fight. We have to show people what single payer is, show them what it can be, and demystify it. And more importantly, we need to show people it's not what they fear it is. Because you know what? The whole country's not on board with this. And once the groundwork is done, once we have convinced enough of the people, then convincing our legislators will be easier. And the masses will be behind us. And then it will actually happen. Yelling, burn it to the ground until we get what we want is not the way. That is the way that Republicans have been legislating, and look at how little they have accomplished. Guys, it's work. It's all work. These all or nothing attitudes are looking for an easy way out. And these attitudes do nothing but get in the way of those on the ground doing the real work to affect change and make a real and lasting difference. Now, on the other side of the comments, those who support this legislation, we have an example of where we should all stand. Craig says, who does have 155 upvotes. He says, quote, "The logical solution is single-payer healthcare, but as long as politicians remain puppets of the healthcare companies and special interest groups, that will never happen. At the very least, we need to rescue the current system before Trump, Ryan, and McConnell completely destroy it." Unquote. And Evans says, quote, "Please vote yes on this measure to stabilize insurance markets and help American families get health care. As a pediatrician, I recognize it is not a full solution, but even while we complain that this is a band-aid, it is a band-aid many families need to get affordable insurance. I am personally for single-payer health care to genuinely reduce cost. But in the meantime, this bill will tangibly help." Unquote. Guys, government is built to move slow, and it is frustrating, but ultimately, in a country this size, sometimes it is necessary so that the people can evolve with policy. I have a bit of fun news. The anti-abortion, anti-birth control, and anti-woman in Health and Human Services Department, destructively heading up the Title X Federal Family Planning Program, was escorted from the Department of Health and Human Services premises on Friday. We talked about this traitorous woman before. Teresa Manning, who previously worked for anti-abortion groups, including the Family Research Council and National Right to Life, had been serving as a deputy assistant secretary for HHS's Office of Population Affairs. In that role, she was responsible for helping set national policy around family planning, contraception, and teen pregnancy, a development that alarmed abortion rights groups, which should have alarmed everybody, come on, worried about Manning's outrageous history of statements and actions. Manning stated in a 2003 public radio interview that, quote, "contraception doesn't work," unquote.
That's stupid.
She also has separately suggested a link between abortion and breast cancer.
You're stupid!
Which has not been proved, because, you know, science. And, of course, helped craft state legislation to limit access to abortion.
Stop being stupid!
So you understand my elation at reading that this puritanical Dark Ages throwback got fired and was escorted from the building. Yay! And we don't know why. I want to know why. She must have had a change of heart and decided abortion and birth control are good things and that women deserve to have control over their own bodies or something. Because honestly, I can't imagine anything else at this administration that would get them fired. Supposedly, staff members were told to leave the floor of the HHS building and to take their computers in order to ensure that no one witnessed her being escorted out. Bye-bye. And we have more good news. A report showing that renewable prices may soon outcompete fossil fuels offers just the latest evidence to bolster demand that oil, gas, and coal should be left in the ground. The cost analysis from the International Renewable Energy Agency for delivering electricity was presented Saturday at the opening of the organization's 8th assembly in Abu Dhabi. Prices are already falling for renewable power generation, the publication notes, and says that wind and solar power will be on par with, or even cheaper than, the cost of fossil fuel generated electricity by 2020. The report says, among the remarkable price reductions has been utility-scale solar PV, which have dropped 73% since 2010. That's awesome! Soon, it will simply just not be economically sound to keep up with these planet-destroying energy techniques.
We'll see how long it takes the Neanderthalic USA to catch up.
All right. This weekend was Martin Luther King's birthday.
I have a dream. I have a dream. I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream. We will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day.
CNN's John Blake wrote out three ways in which Martin Luther King not only spoke to his generation, but to ours, and I thought they were pretty salient. Quote, he was an environmental hero. King still inspires environmental activists because they say he was so eloquent in articulating a core belief of their movement, the interconnected nature of life. He was a socialist. King called for universal health care and education, a guaranteed annual income, and the nationalization of some industries, decades before Bernie Sanders' debut in national politics. He never let a political disagreement turn nasty. King's magnanimous nature helped him deal with something people today, many people find hard to believe. He was persistently unpopular during his lifetime. Unquote.
My dream for today's world is to eliminate poverty and for every human being to have equal, fair access to education and healthcare. I have a dream that from the sincere, caring people here in America, there will arise some young people who are committed to helping their communities. I believe if we could convince these people to run for local, state, and even national offices, then we can vote for them and have sympathetic people and power that can change things.
That was Tutanori Cohn, an elementary school student from the Houston area. In her speech, which won first place this weekend at the 22nd annual Gardere MLK Jr. Oratory Competition. She was the first girl to win in several years.
In Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, Dr. King said, I have a dream that one day right here in Alabama, little black boys and little black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and little white girls as sisters and brothers. Well, I believe only if these children who are joining hands are not hungry, have had a good night's sleep and a decent home, and have received the best education and the best health care, then we'll be able to say that Dr. King's dream has really come true. Thank you.
Martin Luther King's daughter on Monday, Bernice King, had this to say.
We cannot allow the nations of the world to embrace the words that come from our president as a reflection of the true spirit of America. We are one people, one nation, one blood, one destiny, and has already been said, all of civilization and humanity originated from the soils of Africa. Now, I think you would agree that in light of the current state of affairs in this nation and in this world, we desperately need my father's voice, his teachings, and his love for humanity.
Meanwhile, Senator Elizabeth Warren called Donald a racist bully while speaking at an MLK Day breakfast in Boston.
Now is the time. Donald Trump is a racist bully, and we know how to deal with bullies. We do not back down. We do not shut up. We fight back. And no matter what they throw at us, nevertheless, we persist.
And gloriously, in front of Puritan Pence, our vice president, with his unhealthy boss obsession, a pastor took Donald to task. Parishioners said the vice president was visibly red-faced as Pastor Maurice Watson gave his indictment of Pence's forbidden fantasy lover, Donald J.
And a statement was made that we ought to welcome people from Norway more than we welcome people from Haiti. I stand today as your pastor to vehemently denounce and reject such characterizations. Whoever said it is wrong. And they ought to be held accountable. You are owed an apology, but you probably won't get one. But even if you don't get one, I as your pastor and your metropolitan family will stand shoulder to shoulder, heart to heart, and breast to breast with you as we acknowledge your worth, your dignity, your humanness.
In honor of MLK Day, I am going to celebrate a powerful Black woman in media, Joy Ann Reid. Dear media, this is how you deal with Trump surrogates discussing shithole gate. And this is how you control an interview.
This is not Fox News.
On Sunday mornings, AM Joy, Diversity Coalition for Trump advisor Stephanie Hamill joined Joy Reid on a panel. And Hamill, of course, jumps right in with both feet to defend Trump's racist rant about shithole countries, denying the repeatedly verified comments and calling it the biggest fake news story of the week. She then ragged that people are angrier at Trump than the Clintons for getting rich off of poor Haitians, and launched into a completely false conspiracy theory that implied that the Clinton Foundation had ordered immense kill. Yeah, okay, here you go. Just listen.
You can also ask Klaus Eberwein, the former Haitian government official that has all the dirt on the Clinton Foundation. Oh, wait, actually, you can't ask him because he mysteriously committed suicide the day before he was supposed
what
to testify.
What are we talking about? This is nuts.
Let me ask you a question, Stephanie. Did you get talking points before you came here from the RNC or the White House? It's interesting that yesterday, Mark Burns, who was the surrogate that we had on the Trump side yesterday, tried to roll out that same Clinton stuff. Did you get talking points before you came here?
Joy, I didn't get
did
talking
points. Did you get talking points?
Hold on a second.
Stephanie, we don't know each other, but let me just explain to you, this is not Fox News.
The majority of CNN and many MSNBC hosts take note.
This is not Fox News. We're not going to play the game of rolling out crazy conspiracy theories in the answers to my question.
Hold on. Conspiracy
if
theory.
You have an answer to my question, I'm going to let you give it. But what you're not going to do is throw out crazy conspiracy theories to try to take us off track. So I'm going to let you pause for a minute. I'm going to put you to the side for just a moment. I'm going to go to my other guests because they're more familiar with the way that we do things here.
And that, my friend, is how it's done. And more about the fallout of Shithole Gate, Donald is already toxic to not just America, but to the Republican Party. And gleefully, this is making life hell for the spineless Republicans in office. His racist rant last week is making things even more uncomfortable for elected Republicans who have hidden from reporters, but now have to face constituents. Senator Joni Ernst, Republican of Iowa, experienced her first constituent event in 2018, and it could be a prelude of things to come. In Red Oak, Iowa, on Sunday, Ernst was asked about Donald's recent comments about shithole countries at the otherwise friendly Coffee with Joni event. Constituent Barb Nelson confronted Ernst about, quote, the damage that Trump is doing to our neighbors around the world with his white supremacy talk, unquote. Ernst insists that Trump enjoys support from our world leaders. And then, well, just listen to what happens.
He is standing up for a lot of the countries that where we have seen
name a few. Could you name a few?
Yeah, you bet. Norway, is one of them.
Hear that laughter? That is how ridiculous you sound, Joni. That is how absurd your job is now. You are now, if you aren't already, a joke. Ernst is not up for re-election in 2020, but the GOP is facing a wipeout in the House, and they stand a very good chance to lose control of the Senate in November. If the Republicans are going to brave angry constituents in this climate, they're going to need better answers than Norway. Martin Luther King Day brought protest. In Washington, D.C., at the Trump International Shithole, Hotel, some proud resistors projected the word shithole above the door surrounded by smiling poop emojis. The video, which you can see on my Facebook page at Cables of Resistance, was tweeted by D.C.-based multimedia artist Robin Bell of Bell Visuals. And it shows a series of projections on the hotel's facade, followed by hashtag resist. Some of the projections read, not a D.C. resident, need a place to stay, try our shithole. This protest is not the first Bell has projected onto the Trump Hotel or even other buildings. In September 2017, Bell put up, Trump is a bomb threat. And also, this is not a game. And in December, employees at the CDC were told to avoid using those seven words, remember? And Bell then projected them onto the Trump Hotel in protest. He projected, "We will not be silenced," followed by words from the vocabulary blacklist, which included diversity, vulnerable, and science-based. Rock on. More of this, please. Sadly, Martin Luther King Day was mostly about the ridiculous racist comments that our KKK president made last week. Hundreds of Haitian Americans and others rallied in Times Square in New York and in Florida, Donald's precious Mar-a-Lago, where he spent the day golfing. Politicians, including Democratic Mayor Bill de Blasio, joined the demonstration on Monday. Protesters carried Haitian flags and signs with messages including peace, love, power, dream. The Republican on high, he says, he has a wonderful relationship with Haitians. But sure, let's take his word for it. Anderson Cooper.
Haitians slap your hand hard when they shake it. They look you in the eye. They don't blink. They stand tall and they have dignity. It's a dignity many in this White House could learn from. It's a dignity the president, with all his money and all his power, could learn from as well.
But at least the media, at long last, has woken up to the fact that it should have woken up to, that was plain as day in the 90s. That Donald J. is an overweight, unhinged, raging racist and a white supremacist who believes in eugenics. Look it up, he does. What is with the media, or more than that, politicians' reticence to call a person who behaves and speaks in a racist manner a racist? Even Hillary, in the heat of the campaign, pulled the BS line, "I don't know what's in his heart, but..." Yes, you do! Come on, children! He's a racist! It is though it is worse to call someone a racist than it is for someone to actually be racist.
I thought that this was a corner that we should have turned after Charlottesville, but I guess not.
But the media has turned a corner, and many of them are calling him a racist. But the media is slow, and the politicians are slower. So far, I've only heard members of the Black Caucus calling the orange monster what he is. But any progress is still progress, no matter how slow. We do have this problem in general, don't we? It seems it is worse to call someone or be called one than it is to be one. We have the same point of view when it comes, or like the same habit of being more upset and concerned with the loss of the future of a man who's been accused of rape than we do for the victims of those rapists. Remember the Stanford rapist, Brock Turner, and the judge who was so worried about the young man's future and well-being, so he gave him a fluffy, cozy sentence? To say nothing of the poor victim whose life will never be the same. And maybe this point is shifting in the light of the Me Too movement. But then again, maybe not. Ron Keat has an article called "Are Boner-Killing Feminists Murdering Your Sexy Movies?" Probably. And she discusses a piece in The Hollywood Reporter by Titania Siegel titled "How the Me Too Movement Could Kill Some Sexy Hollywood Movies." That's right. Us feminists want to come in and snuff out sex in the world with our asexual meat hands. Die. Die, sexy, die. No! None at all. Feminist, contrary to popular opinion, loves sex. We love sex so much, we want all parties involved to enjoy it equally. And if, as Titania Siegel suggests, Me Too is going to kill sexy movies, then she has a very strange and concerning perspective of what sexy is. If sexy is non-consensual female subjugation, abuse, and rape, then I think therapy, and lots of it, is necessary. And let me be clear. It is about consent and context. What we don't need is more movies that frame things in the wrong light. Like, for instance, Gone with the Wind. Scarlett doesn't realize how much she loves Rhett Butler until he rapes her.
Sure! That's how it works. Let's make more movies like this.
Siegel points out in her article that there are two movies struggling to find financing. And producer David Permont, who has produced Hacksaw Ridge, says, quote, "The studios and the financiers are going to be conscientious of putting something out there that could alienate audiences and restrict the potentiality of the film," unquote. Referring to both Me Too and international box office considerations. Which seems, I don't know, like a no-duh comment. Every movie receives funding with the social tides in mind, so this is not exactly a bombshell notion. Permont couldn't find traditional financing for two of his upcoming films that deal with sexual storylines. One is I Am Chippendales with Ben Stiller and Dave Patel and Russ and Roger Go Beyond, which chronicles the unlikely friendship between the sexploitation director Russ Meyer and film critic Roger Ebert, a Meyer devotee who wrote the screenplay for his Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
It's all here. Love, rape, murder, dope, grass, abortion, suicide. Something for everybody.
Instead, both are being financed independently. What? I don't know, I'm just having trouble feeling sorry for the dude at the moment. Now I know, everyone is clamoring to see the latest Russ Meyer biopic. And I'm sure financiers did not take audience interest into account when agreeing to pour money into the film, and only thought about the testy ladies. You know what? To take a point from the Wanaki article, maybe it's time we do a few movies that don't fetishize men who demean, dismiss, exploited, or even abused women. I don't know, just a thought. Unbeknownst to me, there's actually a great feminist story to be told straight from the Russ Meyer universe. Her name is Tara Santana, and she was a legitimate badass with an incredible life story. Quote, after being gang raped at the age of 9 and seeing her attackers go free, Santana dedicated herself to martial arts. Over the next 15 years, she tracked down each one of them and exacted her revenge. She started a girl gang. She became a burlesque star, and then a movie star, and then she turned down a proposal from Elvis. Maybe instead of wringing our hands wondering if this atmosphere of consent is good and you can sexually harass and assault anyone is so oppressive that it contributed to the movie about Russ Meyer not getting a traditional financing and having to be made as an indie film, we ought to ask ourselves where the damn Tara Santana biopic is and why no one is trying to get that made and financed. There is a documentary about her being made starring John Waters and Margaret Cho, but that movie is getting its financing from Kickstarter. Why is Tatiana Siegel not mourning that? People are often inclined to wring their hands and go, oh, but what about the men folk? To worry about the bright future of rapists, to worry about the careers of men who have been accused of sexual assault or harassment, to worry about the men whose stories won't get told in this kind of environment. We don't worry about the bright futures ruined for women who have been raped or quit their careers because they were sexually harassed, whose stories, regardless of how compelling they are unlikely to be told. Part of that is because we are not telling those stories to begin with. When you watch a movie or read a book, you spend a chunk of your time imagining what it is like to be in the other person's shoes. You empathize with them, and their struggles become your struggles. If only, for an hour or two, making our cinematic gaze less male-centric might actually result in people being at least as able to empathize with women as they are with those who prey on them. Unquote. Again, that was from feminist Robin Pinacochia, that's a guest there, in Wanakeet,
the international home of the resistance.
And I have these two cents in regards to the Me Too movement. There are many ways in which this movement can yield worrying outcomes. But not being able to make films that celebrate misogynist or bad behavior simply is not one of them. Hollywood is going to be fine, boo-boos. Let's attempt to maintain perspective and concentrate on things that matter right now. Okay, that is about all my time. I will not have a new episode on Friday. Likely, I won't have a new episode on Friday. Because I am going to be in the city doing cat rescue. Ah! Wish me luck. I'm hoping to come out with all my limbs. Thank you for sticking with me in this episode of K Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download this show at crabdaddy.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. I'm also at citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice and on Facebook, where you will find all the stories I've discussed and so much more at K Voice of Resistance. If you want to laugh and rage at your liberal progressive news, I suggest checking out the Crab Diving Podcast with Patrick Vile and comedian Ryan Pfeiffer 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All right, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
On some positions, it is necessary for the moral individual to take a stand that is neither safe, nor politic, nor popular, but he must do it because it is right.